It's not just the steamers, not just the big ones. It's any man's game on the Hokitika Bar, Walter. That sand will ground a schooner on the wrong tide.
I well believe it, Moody said. Our vessel was a bark, none too large, agile, hardy enough to weather the most dreadful of storms. And yet the captain wouldn't risk her. He elected to drop anchor in the roadstead and wait for the morning.
The Waterloo, that her name? She's a regular in and out from Chalmers.
A private charter, as a matter of fact, Moody said. Name of Godspeed. He might have pulled a pistol from his pocket. Such was the shock that name produced. Moody looked around. His expression was still mild, and saw that the attention of the room was now openly fixed upon him. Several of the men put down their papers. Those who had been dozing opened their eyes, and one of the billiard players advanced a step towards him, into the light of the lamp. Balfour, too, had flinched at the mention of the bark's name, but his grey eyes held Moody's gaze coolly.
"Indeed," he said, seeming in an instant to shed all the effusion and bluster that had characterized his manner up until that point. "I confess to you the name of that craft is not unknown to me, Mr. Moody. Not unknown. But I should like to confirm the captain's name also, if you have no objection."
Moody was searching his face for a very particular quality, one that if he had been pressed, he would have been embarrassed to name aloud. He was trying to see if Balfour seemed haunted. He was sure that if the other man's mind leapt to imagine or to remember the kind of preternatural horror that Moody himself had encountered aboard the Godspeed, then its effect would be only too visible. But Balfour merely looked wary, as when a man hears of the return of one of his creditors and begins in his mind to tally his excuses and methods of escape. He did not look tormented or afraid. Moody was certain that anyone who had witnessed what he had would bear the mark of it. And yet Balfour was changed. There was a new shrewdness to the other man's aspect, a new sharpness to his gaze. Moody felt energized by the alteration. He realized, with a surge of excitement, that he had underestimated him.
"I believe the captain's name was Carver," he said slowly. "Francis Carver, if I remember rightly. A man of considerable strength, with a brooding look, and a white scar upon his cheek. Does that description match your man?"
"It does."
Balfour was scanning Moody's face in turn.
"I'm very curious to know how you and Mr. Carver came to be acquainted," he said after a moment. "If you would indulge the intrusion, of course."
"Forgive me, we are not acquainted," Moody said. "That is, I'm sure he would not recognize me if he saw me again."
He was resolved, in accordance with his strategy, to field Balfour's questions politely and without reservation. It would give him license later to demand some answers of his own. Moody had no small genius for the art of diplomacy. As a child, he had known instinctively that it was always better to tell a partial truth with a willing aspect than to tell a perfect truth in a defensive way. The appearance of cooperation was worth a great deal, if only because it forced a reciprocity. Fair met with fair. He did not look about him again, but instead kept his eyes wide and his face open, and directed his speech wholly to Balfour, as if the 11 staring men on his periphery did not trouble him in the least.
"In that case," Balfour was saying, "I shall hazard to guess that you purchased your ticket from the ship's mate."
"Paid him into his own pocket, sir."
"You had a private arrangement with the man?"
"The scheme had been devised by the crew with the master's consent," Moody replied. "An easy enough way to turn an extra shilling, I suppose. There were no berths of any kind. One was allotted a place below decks and instructed to stay sharp and keep out of the way. The situation was not at all ideal, of course, but my circumstances compelled my immediate departure from Dunedin, as you know, and Godspeed was the only scheduled departure on the day I wished to leave. I did not know the mate prior to our transaction, nor any of the other passengers, nor any of the crew."
"How many passengers came in under this arrangement?"
Moody met Balfour's gaze levelly.
8, he said.
and put his mouth on his cigar. Balfour was quick to pounce upon this.
That's you and seven others, eight in sum?
Moody declined to answer the question directly. The passenger list will be published in Monday's paper. Of course you may examine it yourself, he said, with a slightly incredulous expression, as though to imply that Balfour's need for clarification was not only unnecessary but unbecoming. He added, My real name, of course, will not appear there. I travelled under the name Philip de Lacy, this being the name of the man whose papers I purchased in Dunedin. Walter Moody, as the authorities have it, is currently somewhere in the South Pacific, bearing eastward, I expect, towards the Horn. Balfour's expression was still cool.
Please allow me to inquire one thing further, he said. I should like to know, merely, whether you have cause to think well or ill of him. Mr. Carver, I mean.
I'm not sure that I can answer you fairly, Moody said.
I have on my authority only suspicion and report.
I believe that the man was under some duress to leave Dunedin, for he was anxious to weigh anchor despite predictions of a coming storm, but I am entirely ignorant of the business that compelled his haste. I did not formally meet him, and saw him only from a distance during the voyage, and then only rarely, for he kept to his cabin much of the time. So, you see, my opinion is not worth very much.
And yet...
And yet, Balfour prompted, when Moody did not go on. He waited.
To be frank with you, sir,
Moody said, turning squarely to face the other man,
I discovered certain particulars concerning the ship's cargo while aboard that made me doubt her errand was an honest one. If I am certain of one thing, it is this. I wish never to make an enemy of Mr. Carver, if that event is in my power to avoid.
The dark-haired man on Moody's left had stiffened.
Found something in cargo, you said, he interposed, leaning forward. Aha, Moody thought, and then, now is the time to press my advantage.
He turned to address the new speaker.
Please forgive me if I neglect to elaborate, he said. I mean no disrespect to you, sir, but we are strangers to one another. Or rather, you are a stranger to me, for my conversation with Mr. Balfour tonight has reached more ears than his alone. In this I am disadvantaged, not unto myself, as I have represented myself truthfully, but unto you, for you have made my acquaintance without introduction, and heard my piece without invitation or reply.